This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think there's always going to be people with more stuff than other people. And I'm not seeking to make a totally egalitarian world such that everyone has exactly the same amount of money. I don't think everybody wants the same amount of money, but I would like to see a world in which everyone's basic needs are met. It seems so basic to me.
Today on Sea Change Radio, we talk to two innovative thinkers, one who's already had an impact on how most Americans live, work, and exchange goods, and another who hopes to revise how we conceptualize and apply currency. Our first guest is Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist. We've all heard the adage, one man's treasure is another man's trash, but nothing illustrates the point more clearly than a perusal of the listings on Craigslist, a website that may be the single greatest influence in getting people to reuse stuff instead of always buying it new. We asked Craig if this sustainability angle was a part of his driving vision or more of a happy accident, and learn about his latest project, Craig Connects. Then we talk with Matthew Slater, whose ambitious software initiative Drupal strives to create alternative or complementary currencies that will keep commerce more local and reduce the carbon price tag of everyday exchanges. My guest on Sea Change Radio is the founder and customer service rep of Craigslist and Craig Connects, Craig Newmark. Craig, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, I'm really glad to be here.
When did you form Craigslist and what was the inspiration behind it?
In 94, I was at Charles Schwab, you know, the discount brokerage. I was showing people what the internet was at that time. I saw a lot of people helping each other out. I got the advantage of a little help. So in 95, I figured, well, I'll give back too. I started a simple email list, mostly events, and then just listened to feedback, followed through with what made sense, listened to more feedback, followed through again, and in a sense, that's our history to this day. We listen and then we do something.
And when I hear the credo of the green movement, reduce, reuse, recycle, and think practically about how to do that in my own life, One of the first things that comes to my mind is Craigslist, especially as it pertains to the reuse part of that motto. How much was this sustainability angle and the reuse part of Craigslist part of what you had envisioned for Craigslist?
Well, frankly, when I started, I didn't envision this stuff. Honestly, I have really no vision at all. The idea is that people were starting to post stuff for free on the site, and then we realized, well, we need a free category. And that's great, because sometimes it's better for everyone if stuff is reused, and giving it away free or selling stuff like home furniture, you know, that's a real grassroots, real honest way of reusing stuff. A lot of it happens. And I'm personally pretty pleased about that. It's recycling for real.
So there wasn't a real environmental sustainability angle as part of your motivation to build the site. This was one of the pleasant byproducts of it becoming so popular.
That's pretty much the case. That is, no conscious thought that, hey, this is a reuse thing. But that's kind of the idea below the surface. The idea is to live this stuff, you know, to use just what one needs. And so it seemed pretty natural to have sections like free.
Tell us about the barter feature of Craigslist. It seems like it's a really great way to reduce the wanton consumerism that is in so many ways the hallmark of this postmodern era.
Well, the barter stuff comes down to sometimes people might want to trade one thing for something they really need. Given this economy, I have seen cases where people barter their skills to put food on the table. I'm glad we can help with that, although, you know, I can't wait for the economy to get better.
And you mentioned you're a bird watcher, and you just saw some hummingbirds and tweeted about it. So you must have a deep appreciation of nature. Would you call yourself an environmentalist?
I'm not a real environmentalist. I just try to practice some of the principles. I try to use only what I need. As for my bird watching, frankly, birds come visit me. I have bird feeders set out, maybe like 10 or so feet, right in front of me as I sit in my home office. I could, if you wish, give you a birdography of all the species I've seen today, but I probably should spare you.
And you also use Foursquare to tell people where you are, and that's more than just telling somebody, hey, I'm having a cup of coffee here, or I'm getting on this bus. There's more to it than that, and it has a sustainability angle too, doesn't it?
I'll tweet, for example, when I'm on the 43 bus, or for that matter, the 6 bus or light rail. You know, it's not that I really want to be mayor of the 43, but I want to make a little bit of a stand for taking public transportation. It's not a big deal in itself. It's a small part of what could be a very big deal if a lot of people were saying, hey, public transportation is the right way to go.
You mentioned that you try to live within your means, and you're somebody who's fairly well known for eschewing the big dot-com boom, which many people who would have been in your shoes would have possibly wanted to cash in. What made you decide that you had enough and that you didn't need to be a billionaire to be happy?
Well, it's a combination of small observations. Sometimes you just got to know when enough is enough. It's not altruistic or anything like that. But, you know, at conferences or whatever, I spend time sometimes with people who've made a billion or more, you know, in this industry. They're not any happier than anyone else. And I figure if you make enough to provide for your future, maybe that of your family and so on, then it's more satisfying to change things. So that's what I'm doing, and frankly, that's what CraigConnex is about.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking with the founder of Craigslist, Craig Newmark. Craig, you recently embarked on a new nonprofit endeavor called CraigConnex. Please tell us, what's it all about?
Well, in the short term, CraigConnex.org is about, well, I figure I'll stand up for, or you could say I'm bearing witness, for a lot of good efforts that people are doing that really help other people out in a serious and effective way. In the longer term, I'm trying to get many millions more people involved in helping each other out in ways that matter.
And what are some of those ways?
What I'm doing in the short term on the site are some efforts, for example, involved in helping out military veterans and their families. I'm helping out, in small ways, the cause of Mideast peace, helping create a more accountable and transparent government. I've located organizations which are good at these things, and then I'm trying to help them in small ways and large ways, although the common denominator is always helping with social media.
And how can people connect with CraigConnex?
Well, the deal is, check it out, CraigConnex.org. People should see it and figure out what makes sense for them, maybe in specific efforts that I'm working on, or maybe people have other efforts that they think are very important, and they can send them in to me via the Connect with Craig mechanism we have there, because we're trying to figure out how to do a better job. Or a person can build a similar site, standing up for what they believe in, and then let me know about it. The idea is to build networks of influence from the grassroots on up.
What are some of the long-term goals for it?
In the somewhat longer term, let's say 20 years, I want to see everyone on the planet connected online, working for their own unique individual visions of the common good. The deal is that, people everywhere are getting connected. Sometimes it may just be through simple cell phone technologies, but the internet is everyone's printing press, and everyone should have a voice.
Well, that sounds like a very righteous goal. And I hope that people go to CraigConnex.org and check it out. Craig Newmark, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I appreciate it.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Matthew Slater. He's a software activist who's involved in the complementary currency movement. Matthew, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, I'm honored to be here.
Matthew, first tell us in a nutshell, what is the complementary currency movement?
There's a lot of people who are dissatisfied with the way that the normal money we use in our pockets and in our bank accounts are dissatisfied with the way that that works. And they think that there are possibly better ways of achieving the same things that that money achieves. And so there are people who've been doing this for years and years, and they're working with real communities, and they're designing different kinds of currencies to achieve different ends very often.
Walk us back a bit to the genesis of the movement, and what's the problem it's trying to solve?
It seems to me that throughout history, there's been almost a conflict going on between the people who control the money supply and the people who use it. And you can see it flipping back and forth, especially in American history. There's a book by Stephen Zarlinger, who runs the American Monetary Institute. I have forgotten the title. But it catalogues how the control of money goes between this banking elite and the government. And right now, or at least since 1913, with the institution of the Federal Reserve, the banking elite has been in charge of issuing the currency. And their currency is designed in such a way that it is always putting the users of the money into debt and drawing all the resources of the economy into the center where they are. And some people think that that's unjust. So the complementary currency movement, you can't say exactly when it started, because it's been there, you know, right since money was invented. There have been these alternative designs of money, and sometimes they've even run the country for, you know, decades at a time. But the movement came to prominence in the Depression, when there were these scrip currencies going all around the US. Because there was no money, because the money had been sucked out of the economy in the Depression, people were just almost just writing bits of paper and using them as money, like checks. That functioned very, very well. But then Roosevelt, I think it was, had a better idea. And with the assistance of his financial advisors and the banks, they brought in the New Deal. And part of that was to shut down these scrip currencies.
And the current system in most industrial nations is a debt-based banking system, and the currency that's issued doesn't zero out. Can you explain to our listeners how money is designed?
Well, that's exactly it. Money is debt. The money is created when people like you and I go to the bank and get a mortgage, or if a business goes and gets a loan. The money didn't exist before that. They just write it up as an accounting entry and stick the money in your account. That's very easy for a bank to do, but bear in mind that they then charge interest on that money. Quite what value they provide is debatable.
And tell us about some of the inroads that have been made in the alternative currency movement. Give us an example of where this movement has been able to solve a problem on a local level.
Probably the most established example of a complementary currency really, really working is in Switzerland, where they have something called a Wir Bank, where Wir means us. And the Wir Bank is, or at least was until it was redesigned, a large mutual credit system which works between businesses. So the businesses extend credit to each other. And one thing that's been observed about the Wir Bank recently is that it is, it's called counter-cyclical. And that means that when there's a problem with the national money, the Wir Bank comes into its own, because national money gets scarce from time to time, but mutual credit currencies are not scarce. And so in a recession, people turn to the Wir Bank and to this, effectively it's just a big business-to-business barter system, and it keeps the economy chugging along.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. My guest is software activist Matthew Slater, who's involved in the complementary currency movement. Matthew, why is alternative currency and the complementary currency movement, why are these issues and mutual credit, why are they sustainability issues?
Well, it's not that the complementary currencies are sustainability issues. It's that the existing money system is deeply, deeply, fundamentally unsustainable. And the amount that we're producing is a sustainability issue. And there's no way to cut consumption without changing the design of money. At least I've never heard of a way. So that's one issue. And the other main issue is that we have a very globalized economy now. And again, that's connected to the design of money. Money has been gradually tweaked over the years so that it flows very, very easily between countries. And this means it's much cheaper, particularly for the US, to manufacture things in China. But then there's this huge traffic of containers going from China to US, and then presumably empty container ships going back. And this is all very, very wasteful. You've probably heard about the example of the Coke can that goes six times around the world as part of its manufacturing process.
Why don't you tell our listeners what that entails?
Well, I don't know the details, but you can imagine all the processes involved in Coke. You've got the mining the bauxite, processing it, which is very energy intensive, painting it, pressing it, and then filling it up with Coke. And then each process goes on at a different part of the world. And because of the design of money, and when you measure by money, it's more efficient that way to move the Coke can around the world and do different processes to it. But in fact, by any other measure, it's not efficient. It's incredibly wasteful. But it's because we're all focused on what money values, we say it's more efficient that way. Stop wasting my time. You know what I want. You know what I need. Oh, maybe you don't. Do I have to come right flat out and tell you everything? Give me some money.
Follow the shift to sustainability with SeaChange Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. My guest is software activist Matthew Slater. How could local currency help solve the sustainability issues with a cell phone, for example?
Well, it's not the localness of the currency that is the sustainability issue. It's the cell phone itself and how it's made and where it's made that's a sustainability issue. We're not going to produce cell phones in every town like we produce bread on every street corner. And so there will always be a need, if we intend to continue down our high-tech route, there's going to be a need for very, very specialized industries, of which there can only be a few. And I think it's in technology that we should be investing what energy we have. Because we do need to ship parts of laptops around the world from one factory to another. But these things are not heavy things. It's not like shipping fruit around the world. You see what I mean? So local currencies aren't going to address that. But at the same time, we can use different currency designs. So complementary currencies can address the issues of buying technology and international products.
How could we engage more powerful organizations like banks and governments to buy into an alternative currency movement? Or is this something that needs to be done without these actors?
Not at all. It doesn't have to be only a grassroots up thing. The grassroots thing is very much my approach. I'm working to give software to communities, in particular at the moment the Let's communities, so that they can manage their own economies. But there's a whole other top-down approach to bringing about change. And if the top-down approach works, then it would be all a lot easier and a lot more efficient. The top-down approach says, all we have to do is convince the government to change the design of money or to issue it themselves. In San Francisco and in the US, there's a a movement for public banking, cheerleaded by Ellen Brown, who wrote an excellent book called The Web of Debt. And so we need to be approaching the problem from both angles, both trying to lobby the government to change the currency design, but also working with banks, because if the design of currency changes, they're going to lose a major source of income. So we need to work out what the appropriate role of banking should be. And then we need to work on the grassroots as well, and that involves helping people to understand about the problems of the design of money and to put in place systems that help them to use more appropriate alternatives.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. My guest is software activist Matthew Slater. Matthew, can you tell us a little bit about, in more detail, some of the software you're developing and how it's going to solve some of the problems you've mentioned?
Well, I focused very much on one problem, and I've made that my problem in this field. And what I want to do is to make it easier for communities who are organized and who understand to manage their own systems of exchange, to keep their own books, and so they don't have to use this bank money, and they don't have to go into so much debt in order to live. And so I've picked a software framework called Drupal, and I'm building a module for it called Mutual Credit. And Drupal is an open source platform, and a lot of people know it, and you can go into it and you can change the code, or you can write your own modules for it. And people find it relatively easy to pick it up and play with it. And so in these communities that I'm attempting to support, they have more or less software skills and the ability to go and learn it and experiment with it.
And if people wanted to get involved in Drupal, how could they access it?
Well, you go to drupal.org or Bitnami, and you can download it, because obviously Drupal serves websites. It runs on a web server, so you need to have a web server to install it on. And you can just install it and start playing with it, and then install modules. There's lots and lots of help in the community, and there's local groups and things.
Well, let's take it the next step and see it. Let's say it's reached a woman who runs a small baking shop in Nairobi. How would she ideally tap into a Drupal or a similar mutual credit scenario?
It's funny you should ask that, but we're working with a close partner in Mombasa. He's running his own community currency project in the slums, and he keeps telling me we need SMS transactions, because obviously you can't go to a website every time you want to do a trade, especially if you happen to live in a slum in Mombasa. So everyone has phones there, and we're nearly there. The idea is you could just SMS to the web server a message that says, pay so-and-so this much for that. And then the software will parse that, and it will just create a transaction and message you back saying, you know, your balance is this and that.
Haven't the SMS systems in developing countries already created some of these alternatives to legal tender that you're talking about? Sometimes they use minutes, right?
This is right. The mobile phone companies and a lot of other phone companies are seeing this vast new marketplace opening up in payment systems, and they're trying to get a piece of it. And one way in Africa is that minutes are being traded as a currency. That's to say, prepaid minutes on your mobile phone are being traded as a currency. And they provide some software with the mobile phones to enable you to make those payments. I'm very suspicious of the whole thing. I'm sure it's providing a very valuable financial service to those people. But at the same time, it seems to me too easy to be able to extract money from poor people using that method. Because at the end of the day, the minutes are paid with hard currencies.
I see. So there's that vicious cycle of debt that gets injected.
Yeah, and the need for poor people to compete in an environment where there's no money in order to get money to pay their phone bills.
Tell us about the time banking movement. What are time banks?
Time banks is a social movement started by a lawyer in New York who wanted to encourage people by giving them hours that could be redeemed later on. He wanted to encourage them to do things of social benefit. And time banks are in several countries now. There's over 100 in USA, and they're still very strong on the social side, but also the community building side. With the time banks, they're all actually trading the same unit, and so it's not very difficult to manage the exchange rates between them. What is difficult with two mutual credit clearing circles is when the money keeps flowing out of one and into another, and you have a situation where one has inflation and one has deflation. So when you set up a mutual credit clearing circle, the tricky bit is managing the balance of trade going in and out. You want to set up a circle that has trade going round and round inside it rather than in and out so much.
What's different about mutual credit and the complementary currency movement than a more basic barter system?
Well, if by barter you mean I give you a chicken, you give me a duck. No, it's not that. It's the next level up. But it is, in fact, equivalent to what the barter industry is doing. And as I understand it, almost every town in the US has its own barter system, and they're privately provided. And they're doing much the same. They're saying, here's a unit of account, now go trade with it. It's mutual credit, so everything adds up to zero, and we just log the transactions on a computer. So that's what's understood as barter these days. There's a barter industry providing that. And what I'm doing is the exact same accounting mechanism, but I'm trying to do it for communities more than for business.
We had the founder of Craigslist, Craig Newmark, on the show earlier. How could a complementary currency system work on a site like Craigslist?
Or indeed with eBay. It would be very easy for either of those organizations to introduce their own currency, because you have people on them who are both buying and selling. And so rather than go through all the trouble and expense of money changing hands, you could introduce a much less formal system within them. So people could accept payments in the Craigslist currency or the eBay currency and pay nothing for the transaction charge, because they know that they're going to spend that money within the network.
Well, similar to Craig Newmark, a lot of attention goes to the Silicon Valley types who create software to make big bucks. And we should tell our listeners, you're earning no money from the software that you're creating. This is all free, and you're trying to really just get at the roots of unsustainability through your work.
Well, no, I'm sure I'll end up terribly rich and famous in the end. But rich in complementary currencies, and I'm not quite sure what that means yet. I think there's always going to be people with more stuff than other people. And I'm not seeking to make a totally egalitarian world such that everyone has exactly the same amount of money. I don't think everybody wants the same amount of money, but I would like to see a world in which everyone's basic needs are met. It seems so basic to me.
It does. Matthew Slater, thank you so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It was a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the JBs, Paul McCartney, and Spinal Tap. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists and Incredible Adventures, an eco-friendly outdoor travel company. Go to incadventures.com to learn more. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.